Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Health Tech Edge. My name is Mike Moore, and joining me today is Rahil Redewala, Chief Strategy Officer of Productive Edge. Welcome, Rahil.
Hey, Mike. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. We're going to talk about everybody's subject. I think this is the topic of the year in 2023, which is generative AI. We're almost at the one-year anniversary of when OpenAI released ChatGPT, which for many people was their introduction to AI. And obviously, generative AI is a specific niche within the space, but nearly every company that we work with this year has a team or a group or a tiger team, you know, proof of concept. Something's going on about generative AI. You really can't avoid it in the industry in general, and then, of course, in healthcare specifically where we focus. So I wanted to have this chat with you because I know you're spending a lot of time talking to healthcare leaders on both the payer and the provider side of the industry about generative AI and potential use cases, potential scenarios where it can be used, and maybe some scenarios to avoid. So I just wanted to get into all of that detail today. So let's start off with maybe kind of the concerns, right? Before we just dive in, there's a lot of focus. Most people know about HIPAA in the United States, a law that talks about a variety of subjects, but really kind of focuses on the sensitivity of health data and patient information specifically. So I have to imagine that that's a place where a lot of organizations start, is just being concerned about the sensitivity of the information that the generative AI models could be trained on. Is that a fair assumption?
It is a fair assumption, and it is a really important one. Most companies, as you said, that we've worked with have already stood up teams to focus on identifying the risks, understanding the risks, identifying the opportunities, charting a roadmap, and figuring out how to dip their toe in a way that that is practical. You know, patient data, health information, personally identifiable information is a critical component of the risk assessment. And, you know, there are concerns regarding that, of course, because of, you know, things like prompt engineering and sharing of that data. And then there are implications of that. Specifically around what methods do I use or that are available to me? Can I have my own private LLM box in the cloud that I can use that doesn't share information with anybody or anything, or doesn't use the data to train the model in any way? And there are, of course, various options around that as well. Many are, as you said, many are well on their path to look at those options, understand them better, try things out, do it in a practical way, understand the risks at hand. And we believe at Productive Edge that you certainly have a roadmap of how you can think about what those use cases are and how to think about your risk from that perspective.
And I think that a lot of the talk in the media and the industry is about, you know, there's a language to generative AI that, again, a year ago, most of us didn't have, right? But one thing that there's this word hallucinations that's come up in the world of generative AI, and there's a story that's gone around in the media about an attorney preparing for a case, used generative AI, found, you know, three examples to cite in his petition to the court. And then, of course, it all fell apart because they were all hallucinations. None of the cases actually exist. Right. Didn't go well for that attorney in front of the judge. In the world of healthcare, hallucinations about information on the care delivery side of it, the clinical side of things, could be disastrous for someone's, their life and their health, right? So I know that there's a lot of sensitivity. So when you're talking to healthcare leaders and they're laying out the use cases after kind of doing their risk assessment, what are some of the scenarios they are going after that maybe carry less risk than something that directly relates to patient care?
So before I get into that, I think it's good to answer the question around hallucinations and talk about, how can you reduce them and what is in your control as far as being able to work in a model where you are exposing the information that the LLM should really be using. So how can you, what is the term called, ground the model in a way that uses your best practices, your knowledge base, your content in a way that helps it shape its responses and not just the general data out there that it may have been trained on. So there are ways, of course, to significantly reduce them and ground the model using your personal best practices and, you know, workflow data and all that. I think specific to the opportunities, one of the things that we talk to our clients about, and Mike, if you want to just show that slide now, is really, you know, when you think about the generative AI use cases, you've got to think about not just the use case, but the underlying data. What data is it going to drive the grounding and the understanding that the model will have? And then the other dimension, of course, is what does that data look like? Does it have PII or PHI? Does it not have PII, PHI? And if it doesn't, what's the use case? And what if it does, what is the use case? And we look at it from a productive edge standpoint. You know, we've been really focused on over the last 6 months or so, really understanding the implications, where the technology is, where what it can do, what it cannot do, and where the regulations are, what they can allow, what they're not allowing, and why, and what the actual use cases are and the return on that investment for doing something. So for example, when you think about approaches, one of the things that you're seeing is that you can have an incremental approach that is a bit more manual, and I'll talk a little bit about that. It is lower risk and is faster to market, and it's significantly less in terms of investments upfront. You have a transformational approach that can really think about more integration, connecting directly with with the clinical data, using that to drive the recommendations, and highly automated in terms of being able to convey impacts to certain healthcare workflows. And certainly that's a possibility for a longer term transformational approach. Let me give you an example, right? So when you think about care management as a potential area to explore the use of generative AI, you will see that, you know, care management and your use case particularly is, can generative AI help and assist care coaches, care managers in helping coordinate care for a patient? Can it help them? Because if you look at a lot of studies that talk about that more and more care managers are spending their time inputting information in systems and not necessarily spending time in front and working with patients and helping them solve their care needs. So if you were to build a generative AI model that is going to assist care managers in their quest and their goal of helping and assisting patients and help them coordinate their care, what data would you need? You need healthcare guidelines data. You would need communication records so that you can generate communications. You can, need progress reports. So you can create progress reports. You can, have treatment plans based on expert knowledge or knowledge base that you may have. So as an example, that's a set of data. Now, when you have a set of data, you can do two things. You can either apply my specific PII data and say, here's my information specifically, take all the knowledge you have and tell me what it would be the right thing for that person. So that's one way of thinking about it. So the question is, how do I get that PII, PHI data? And one way to do that would be, of course, is in a manual prompt so that you could say, hey, I am working with a patient that has X and I would like to recommend Y. What is the best next thing that I could do? And based on your best practices, your healthcare guidelines, your progress reports, your treatment plans, it can generate some opinion. Now, whether to take that and how to shape that and have that conversation is up to the care manager. That's more of a manual approach. The care manager is using generative AI as a way to assist them and accelerate their conversation. You can have a more automated approach where you could say, well, I don't need the care manager to really do this. I can essentially feed the generative AI model with data coming from the EHR, and the generative AI model can automatically flag things, automatically create care plans, automatically notify the care manager at the right time about the right intervention, automatically propose something to the patient, the automated workflows, for example. And yes, that is possible, but in order to do that, you need to actually have access to the PII, PHI data. So you know, that's a spectrum. Where do we land in the spectrum? What is possible? Where is the technology at today? Where are the regulations allow me to go far? But overall, you can see that this is a pretty interesting use case, because there is a lot of energy spend and a lot of administrative burden that goes in, you know, care management. And care management is just a very important part of the overall coordinated care journey now, and both from a payer's and provider's perspective. So something needs to happen there to make that work really, really well. And, you know, maybe I can play the role.
And I think that part of what needs to be addressed, obviously, is like any technology that you can roll out to an organization, you have to establish a level of comfort and trust with the users of that technology. So I have to imagine that's part of the calculation here, too. It's like, yes, we could put this in front of care managers, but maybe there is that kind of dipping the toe in the water. Like, how would we start to introduce it, give them a set of tools that they can use, get their buy-in and support? That then might bring them further into it and kind of embracing the tools, versus maybe some might be reluctant to embrace the technology, I'd have to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And the question there is, you know, the question, of course, in front of leaders that are thinking about this is, am I actually drastically changing the current workflow, the actual workflow that is in existence today? Or am I identifying certain points in the current workflow that are inefficient that I can pinpoint and target and say, can generative AI assist there? Why would you want to do that? Largely because if you are already on a longer term transformational path, then obviously you may be thinking about, you know, future state workflows that might be different than the ones you have today. But if you are on a longer term transformation roadmap, what does that mean? You're not going to do any, you're not going to address inefficiencies today. If your transformation roadmap is 2 years long, 3 years long, 4 years long, what will you do? Not address any inefficiencies in the current state? And that's where, you know, there is an opportunity to say, okay, where am I in my journey from a transformational perspective? Because within healthcare, regardless of whether you're a payer or provider, everybody is on a path. You know, where you are on a path depends on individual clients, but everybody is on a path. So the question becomes, what can I do today? What can I do as part of my overall transformation roadmap? And where is an opportunity for me to inject some efficiencies today versus how will this become part of my overall future state?
Yeah, and I mean, they were going to change things anyway, right? Like the introduction of generative AI to the market almost a year ago certainly accelerates some opportunities, presents some challenges maybe in some ways too, because the technology is kind of out in the wild and accessible to many. So you probably don't want your care managers to just copy and paste a patient record into ChatGPT on the public web, right? And kind of, where does that information go? And, you know, what about, all the HIPAA compliance and kind of other health standard, right? Like, so it's like better to control it and manage it, put a set of tools in place, train people and educate them on the appropriate use of that and how we're going to take this organization and kind of introduce the technology in a controlled and compliant way versus just kind of let it go.
Exactly. And as I said, you know, there's technology can be, technology is there to assist, can be applied in a very closed manner. So you can use LLMs and, you know, and ground them with facts that pertain and based on your capabilities. But at the same time, how you actually enable people like care managers and care coaches to actually utilize tools and ensure that, you know, whatever problem they may be putting in or is put in for them, meets the guidelines and regulations and actually helps and assists the workflow in a positive way. Let me give you another example, Mike. We've been thinking a lot about this exact use case, you know, these types of use cases. And one of the ways to sort of guide yourself in your North Star is saying, do I need to start addressing clinical workflows already, starting as a starting point, as the prioritized use cases, the low-hanging fruit, or is there another way? So we looked at the report by McKinsey and JAMA that came out about a couple of years ago that talked about you know, the $250 billion administrative burden in the United States yearly and how to claw that back. And there are a lot of different use cases, a variety of them. And if you start looking at those and say, okay, how many of those are not related to necessarily clinical data and access to clinical data and need for clinical data? And can I start thinking about what those use cases might be? And of course, our care management use cases came out of that, for example. But we also came up with a prior authorization use case. And you know, the leader and people listening in healthcare are very well aware of how expensive of a process and just inefficiencies prior authorization is from a patient experience perspective, from a provider experience perspective, from just the time to care perspective, and of course the cost associated with conducting the prior authorization review. So when you think about prior authorization as various steps, and you say, how do I, again, it goes back to my point earlier, say, okay, if you know what the current state workflow is, can I look at specific steps in the workflow and identify opportunities? So one of the steps in the prior authorization workflow, after you go through receiving submissions from providers, if I'm a payer, receiving submissions from providers, looking at ways to automate, you know, prior authorization decisions. But at the end of the day, many prior authorizations still require manual intervention because you want clinicians to be able to look at a person's specific use case and then be able to provide a recommendation based on coverage guidelines. So if I have a payer, I have some guidelines. When will I cover a spinal fusion surgery? When will I cover, you know, an allergy test, for example? You know, and is it covered for a particular person? So those coverage determinants are quite extensive. In some cases, you could have a 50-page document, and a clinician has to go through that 50-page document to identify, is this coverage rules for that particular payer applicable to this particular person's case that I'm seeing in front of me, and make that decision. Now, going through that process is a long, time-consuming thing, as you can imagine. But generative AI can actually assist there without the need for PI or PHI. Essentially, you can put generative AI models right on top of your coverage determinants document store. And it can, you know, it can essentially answer questions for the manual review, assisting the clinician in doing and conducting their manual review. So that's the use case here, right? It's like, okay, can I take the data, my internal and external, so in case of the CMS, you have the external policy coverage determinants, both national and local. And can I use those, to really ground the model? So it is only looking at my policy coverage determinants and is able to answer questions for the clinician, helping them, actually assisting them to get through a clinical review faster. Again, you don't need to share PII, PHI data. But again, on the flip side, a transformational use case would be, again, maybe I can actually look at the EHR. Maybe I can look at the prior auth submissions as they're coming in real time. And I can actually apply the generative AI coverage determined model at the moment as they're coming in. And I can actually provide a recommendation, and the recommendation can be looked upon by the clinician. And you can see where that could go. So again, when you look at the $250 billion administrative burden in the US, you can start looking at these opportunities. And we have done so, and we've looked at not just this, but referral management is another use case. Explanation of benefits as another use case, right? Care plan creation as another use case. There are various little things here that as you start, you know, sort of marking them and saying, yeah, this is an interesting use case, doesn't require me to really go deep into clinical data, but it's going to assist my clinician, my staff, my care managers to do what they do faster, better, and drive that patient experience. You'll see that you can start actually making an impact holistically. And your transformational, use cases can be aligned to your transformational roadmap. And, you know, as you modernize and think about digitization, and you think about, you know, activation from a member patient engagement, and think about, you know, marketing, you can certainly align a lot of those transformational use cases there. So very excited about where all this can go. We're having conversations with both providers and payers, you know, identifying how can you start, where can you start, where is the technology today, where is it going to be 3 months from now? It's moving at a faster pace, you know, you can't be talking about 2 year, 3 year timelines right now. So how do you you know, make practical decisions and start actually utilizing, you know, the technology to make an impact today?
Yeah, and that's a good segue to our final piece of this discussion for now, I think, which is around the metrics. So, you know, in the U.S. healthcare system, I think they say 4 out of 5 people are dissatisfied with the care that they receive. You know, you're citing the McKinsey study that talks about the huge economic impact. Improving some of these workflows, you know, even I know a lot of the studies that they're doing around healthcare providers and their burnout, right? We see, especially post-COVID, a lot of providers, you know, nurses, doctors, and others just getting burnt out in the profession. Reducing the administrative burden on the industry has the potential to put, as you mentioned earlier with the care managers, you know, more time facing a patient than facing a computer. So what are some of the key metrics that you're seeing healthcare leaders look at to measure the effectiveness of these pilots and to determine whether or not they're successful?
So the one of the major ones is the HEDIS, your HEDIS scores. These are scores, especially for a payer, you know, for your, you know, that encapsulate your patient satisfaction, these surveys, as well as provider satisfaction, as well as your products, and how well are they actually delivering value to members as well. So those are really important. And, you know, in order to up your HEDIS score, you've got to do a lot underneath, right? So you have to cut costs in healthcare. You have to be able to improve your patient experience. You have to be able to improve your provider experience. You have to be able to, you know, be able to demonstrate that you're significantly moving towards value-based care and are actually delivering on certain metrics there. So all of that sort of rolls up into the HEDIS score. And it's really important to be able to map that, identify where there's weaknesses, and then be able to identify, are there areas that generative AI can assist me? If this is a workflow that I'm weak in, and it's a workflow like, for example, a prior auth, for example, that may be heavily impacting your patient satisfaction, then can we make a dent in that by applying generative AI as an example, right? And then I think that's the approach we should be looking at. Let's look at those workflows. Let's identify those and prioritize those use cases. Let's look at how they translate back to your strategic objectives, like in HEDIS score. And let's then put in, address some inefficiencies in the short term, and then start looking at these metrics that can roll up back into, let's say, a HEDIS score and see how we're making it.
Yeah, so I think the big takeaway there is it's not necessarily a brand new set of metrics that are relative to generative AI. It's really kind of making sure that just like any new technology you would bring in for a project is linking it back to your organizational goals and metrics that are already established. If it's not helping you drive the things that you'd already set out in your long-term strategic plan, then you have to question, right? It is kind of the bright, shiny object and a new fun toy to play with. But there is the opportunity to really accelerate the impact or really accelerate the achievement of some of your goals that had already been set for the organization. So I think that's a good place to go.
Yep, agreed.
Super. All right. Well, thank you for your time and kind of walking through this. It's been educational and helpful to take a look at where some opportunities exist in generative AI. Definitely more to talk about here in the future. So we encourage you to subscribe to Health Tech Edge and look forward to talking to you again in the future. So thanks so much, Raheel.
Thanks, Mike. Talk soon.